Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, before we get into this episode, I'm just going to jump in here to let you know that there was a little bit of technical issues with this one on Tiss's end. So for the middle portion of the show, you're going to not hear any input from Tiss. Through creative editing, you won't notice it at all, apart from one point where he's like, I'm back. And that's where you'll realize that he's actually been not there for about 20 minutes. But don't worry, he's there for the important beginning and the important end. The middle bit is just me waffling on anyway. So here we go. This is the final Warrens episode. Enjoy. Oh, what have the housewives of Wisteria Lane been up to this week?
She had a lovely death.
Hello, you're listening to Weird Tales and the Unexplainable. This is your host, Bob Choi, and with me, as always, are Beef. Say hi, Beef.
Hi, Beef.
And Tiss. Say hi, Tiss.
Hi, Tiss.
Lovely. Lovely. I'm so glad you guys joined me with that intro.
Yeah. Well, I've never done a hi, Beef before, I don't think. So,
how did it feel? It's good, isn't it?
It is good. Yeah, I kind of roll my eyes when Tiss does it, but I'm converted.
Yeah. So there we go. Here's a new standard for how we start the shows. But you guys ready for an episode?
Oh, I'm so excited. It's been too long. Yeah, we were going to record, and then I had to sack it off at the last minute because of uni. So yeah, I'm itching for this.
We're already like a little bit delayed anyway. So
yeah.
This is going to be like a week late, but I'm thinking if we can get this one up, we'll do one more. Tiss has got one in the bag, or he's planning it right now, and then we'll have our Christmas break and we'll come back all guns blazing in 2020. So enjoy these last two episodes, listeners.
2020.
I know.
That's mental.
And I'm sure you guys can guess what I'm doing today.
I think I do know, but I'm not going to say it. Or shall I say it and then...
Well, let's Tiss... Does Tiss know?
It's going to be Warrens, isn't it?
Such enthusiasm.
No. Going to be Warrens, I knew it? Because I think you put out a post recently asking for listeners.
Yeah, I did. Like, it's no secret that this was always how I was planning on ending my episodes of this year, because I started my episodes this year with the Warrens.
Yeah, I was looking forward to it.
Yeah, so now we're going to end it. And this will be the last Warrens episode.
I was going to say Warrens anyway. So,
I knew this is what I was fearing.
I'm disappointed. I should have said it before, like Tiss, because now it looks like I'm just jumping on the bandwagon.
You kind of are jumping on the bandwagon.
You should have jumped in at the same time.
I knew it was Warrens. Damn it.
So, yeah, this will be the last ever Warrens episode that we do.
It's like the end of an era.
Yeah, and since we recorded the last Warrens episode, Lorraine Warren has passed on.
Yeah. Maybe we could maybe she'll start haunting somewhere and we can go find her.
That would be good. If we could get a clairvoyant or something to contact her beyond the grave and we could do a posthumous interview with her, that would be really good.
Although, let's be honest, Ed isn't going to let her get a word in edgeways, is he? Bloody hell. Yeah. Poor woman.
Oh, I've got a really good example of that, by the way, on this episode.
Right.
It might be my favourite example of Ed just not letting her get a word in edgeways. Coming up later.
You get the sense that she brings it up on the car ride home.
Yeah, yeah. After they've been interviewed by their son-in-law.
Yeah, yeah. It comes up at Thanksgiving as well. They just sit there around the table.
So as we know, Ed passed away quite a few years ago, and Lorraine passed away April this year. So in honour of that, this episode is going to be called The Warrens R.I.P.
Oh, wow. That's nice. That's a nice,
that's a nice
way to end, I guess. Yeah.
Lovely. I don't know if I think we did kind of mention Lorraine's passing on another episode, one that came out around that time. But she died in April this year, April 2019, on the 19th. Died peacefully in her sleep. Nothing untoward. She wasn't like slayed by Annabelle in the night or something.
I was going to say.
Or was she?
Yeah, well, yeah. That's nice. That's the way I want to go. I want to go in my sleep.
So I got a quote here from her grandson. You say that like you want to go tonight. That's it.
No, not tonight. No, I've got stuff I want to do tomorrow.
Do I get that dissertation done, mate?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I want to get that done. Otherwise, what a waste.
So I've got a quote here from her grandson, Chris McKinnon, regarding her death. He said, "She was happy and laughing until the very end. She was my angel and my hero, and she will be deeply missed. Please join us in celebrating her life and honouring her beautiful soul. Remember to treasure those you love while you can, and thank you and God bless you all." That was what he put out to the world on the day of Lorraine's death. So like I said, it was a nice, a nice pleasant, you know, as good as you could ask for, I guess.
She had a lovely death.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you say, if you get to choose, I think that's how most
best
people
way
would want to go, yeah.
It's the best way out, yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, then you don't know about it.
What's coming in at number two?
Probably something like just instant, bang, hit by a train.
Ooh, grisly.
Like you wouldn't know about that. As long as it's going at 200 miles an hour, you're going to be dead on impact.
Yeah, that's a good shout, actually. Good shout.
Yeah. Same if you hit a big mass of water as well, apparently, apparently if you hit, like if you fell into the sea, it's I don't know what height you'd have to be above.
Just fell into a certain height. Beach.
Oh my god,
dead. No, but if you jump off a certain height and hit the sea, it's like hitting concrete.
Mm.
Oh,
apparently. I've never done it before, but
splat
yeah.
Rips your belly open, doesn't it?
Does it?
I think so.
Ooh, gross.
That's how what is?
The guy who super glued wings to his arms and he flew too close to the sun. That's he died
Icarus.
That way.
Icarus.
Icarus died by falling on water and it felt like concrete.
Really?
Is that true?
Yeah. I remember my parents telling me, because I said, you know, how did he die? Because it was water. Water's soft as fuck. I didn't say that.
I love the idea of like 6-year-old Tiss saying that.
But you know that he wouldn't have changed his language.
Have you ever done a belly flop into the water and your belly just gets slapped like bam?
Yeah, stings.
It's like that times a million, and that's kind of like what the concrete thing is.
That to death.
Lovely.
Yeah, I just remembered thinking like they'd be dead, but like you'd see really red bellies where they'd slapped. It'd slap their bellies to death.
So this is a nice tasteful way to start the show.
Yeah, wonderful.
Talking about an elderly woman passing on.
No, this was Icarus. We're talking about Icarus.
Yeah. Well, I just love the idea of Tiss talking to your parents like that as this little kid, whilst also demanding that your mum go and make you a drink and then throwing it back in her face because it wasn't the right drink.
That is never the way. That is never the way. How dare you?
Mate, we've seen the way you talk to your mum. It's disgusting.
No.
So we've covered a number of cases from the Warrens. It's definitely our longest running series. Some of our most popular episodes. And I thought I'd just run through the cases we've done to see if you guys can sort of remember or recall these cases at all.
Yeah.
And then we'll sort of maybe talk about our favourites.
It's a good idea.
So, first of all, I covered the Perron family. This was the first one we covered, off the back of the first Conjuring movie, which this is the case they used in that. And that was the woman who was possibly possessed by a witch in her house.
Yeah, I remember that one.
And on the same episode, we also talked about the Enfield poltergeist. So it was a bumper episode, that one.
Hey, we did, yeah.
Yeah, which was the girl possessed by an old man, potentially, who would speak through her. We had some cool recordings on that one.
And I remember some of the... oh, yeah, I remember that. And I remember the photos as well. Mm. Was that the episode where there were the photos of the kids? Or whether it was levitation?
Yeah, they were, like, suspended in the air in, like, a red like nightgown.
Yeah.
Quite famous pictures, yeah. The one after that, we covered Annabelle, the haunted doll.
Yep.
We did an episode on the Amityville Horror, with the Lutz family. There was the murder in the house, and then the other family that moved in had a possession story going on, potentially, had to have an exorcism.
The remake of that film that we saw together was on TV the other night.
Patrons of the old Weird Tales and the Unexplainable Patreon would have heard an episode of an old show me and Beef used to do called Unwatchable, and we talked about the Amityville Horror with Ryan Reynolds in it.
Oh, it's just terrible.
It wasn't a good film. So after Amityville Horror, we covered the Snedeker House, which is the story that the haunting in Connecticut, that was the local haunted housey story that we covered, local to the Warrens. Then we did Union Cemetery and the Lady in White. Ed had like filmed the spirit of a ghost a number of times walking around the cemetery.
Oh, yeah.
After that, we did the Demon Murder Case, which was the guy who murdered... I can't remember if it was a co-worker or something, but the interesting thing about that one is it went to a court case and he said that the devil had made him do it. He was possessed by the devil and it came up as an argument in court.
Oh, I remember that now. Yeah.
Then we did the Southend Werewolf. That's the one that came up this year. The guy from Southend who claimed he was a werewolf, possibly possessed, however that was. And finally, on the same episode as that, we also covered the hauntings at Borley Rectory, the potentially most haunted building in England, with the spirit of the nun.
I didn't realise we'd done so many.
Yeah, some of them we did in one episode, but let me have a look. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 episodes. This will be our 8th episode, 8th Warrens episode.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd have said maybe this is the 4th or 5th one, so that's amazing.
Oh, no. Wait, this is the 7th. Did I say that?
You said 7th or 8th.
Maybe so. We did Perron and Enfield in one, Annabelle in one, Amityville in one, Snedeker in one, with the Union Cemetery, Demon Murder Case in one, Southend Werewolf in one with Borley Rectory, and then this will be the 7th. So yeah, 7 episodes.
Wow, that's crazy.
Whoa.
All great stuff, though. I've really enjoyed these episodes. It'd be sad that we've come to an end.
I wondered if you guys had any favourite cases that we'd covered.
I like the London one with the children. That was Warren's, right?
Yeah, the Enfield poltergeist one.
That one, yeah.
Yeah.
Just because it was the one I remember the most.
Yeah, I'd say the Enfield poltergeist was good. The one with the Perron family was fun as well, or I seem to remember that being like creepier than the others.
I like Perron family. That's why I started with that one. I like that case. I find that quite interesting.
And maybe because it's like the Amityville one, I just remember reading up so much about it and being, you know, because of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like, you know, whilst the episode was good, I sort of knew quite a lot of it.
Carry on.
The Perron one was really good. I remember it being creepier than the others, or it feeling like it was creepier.
That one feels creepy to me. The last few have been interesting. There were the two that I didn't think would be a full episode. They ended up being one. The werewolf one. And the demon murder case I actually found really interesting, because that sort of centered around the court case more so, and the ramifications of that, like what are loopholes, like how what would stop someone from using that as a loophole in court. That brought up some interesting conversation. But yeah, I've enjoyed them all. I think the most popular one we've done is the Amityville.
Yeah. Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. It is a classic.
Yeah.
But there's one case, one major case that we haven't covered yet.
A major one? Ooh, okay.
And thing is, I hadn't covered this and I wasn't going to dedicate a whole episode to it because it's sort of in the same vein as some of the others. You know, some of them we've done and we've gone through and we're like, yeah, so it's kind of similar to the other one. It's a haunted house and they had to get it exorcised. And, you know, there's not been too much difference between, like, there has been, but like the Snedeker family and the Perron family and even the Demon Murder case, there was only like slight differences of what made those different. Even the Amityville Horror, it came down to a haunted house, basically. This seemed to be another one of those, but with less of a hook. So I wasn't going to do a whole episode on it, but I thought I would sort of just briefly talk about it on this one so that we've covered the major cases.
Awesome. Will we be aware of it, do you think, or is it?
I don't know if you will or I wasn't really. So this is the case regarding the Smurl family.
Okay.
So that's S-M-U-R-L, Smurl.
Smurl. Intriguing.
So yeah, like I say, this isn't like the only other case they've actually been involved. Do you want to take a guess at how many cases they've been involved in? I think I've mentioned it on other shows.
Isn't it like over 500 or over 1,000?
More.
Over 3,000?
More.
Over 5,000?
More.
Over 10,000.
Too much. I was hoping you'd do that. Yeah, on their website it says they were involved in over 7,000 cases.
Wow, that's crazy. Tis, you sounded like on Men in Black, the alien that takes over the body suit and he's asking for more sugar in the kitchen.
More. More.
More.
More.
More. 7,000, that's insane.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so many.
So for the Smurl family case, what I did is I didn't really do the research in the way I normally would, where I'd read through different reports of the case and sort of pull out the most interesting parts and sort of run through a story to you guys. What I did is I watched a film.
Is that what those screen? That's what those screenshots were on Twitter.
Yeah, it was. Because this is from Ed's opinion, the most honest film that's been made of one of their cases. So this is the 1991 TV movie called The Haunted, which is available to watch for free on YouTube. That's where I watched it.
No way.
Yeah, Becca went out the other night. I whacked a pizza in the oven, sat down and watched The Haunted on my telly. And I just watched the film and sort of took a few notes as I watched it, because this film is supposed to be sort of as it happened. It's not sort of inflaming the events to Hollywoodize it. It's just a straightforward retelling of the events.
There's no sort of Hollywood glitter.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just the telling of the story.
So I'll run through my notes I made whilst watching the film. We'll talk about those. And then I've got a clip to play you of Ed and Lorraine talking about their experience on the case with the Smurl family. So like I said, it came out in 1991 and the film was called The Haunted. It was based on a book of the event called The Haunted, One Family's Nightmare. And this is one of those classic like early 90s American low budget TV movies. It's very like soft filtered, questionable acting in places, quite hammy, but it was like very almost comforting to watch something so trashy. But
I love those things though. I quite like the old, yeah, just the 90s American TV movies. Like I would put like the version of It in there.
Yeah, the Tim TV Curry. Movies. Yeah, and there was the other Stephen King TV series at the time, the Stand TV series, and everything like that. It's quite similar tone, but
just like really shocking acting, but they're just charming.
Yeah. Janet, what's happening? That sort of very flat cadence.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's go through this. So it started in the late 70s. The Smurl family are moving to a new house. Their parents are moving in next door as well. So I have my notes aren't exactly in order. I don't think I caught the guy's name until later on. Jack. Yeah, Jack's parents move in sort of next door to them as well. So you've got Jack and Janet and their kids, and then their parents move in next door as well. Or at least on the same street. And straight away in this new house, they're having electrical issues constantly. They keep having to get repeatedly the boilers going. They're getting new boilers fitted. The wiring's getting messed up. They're having to get it they got the whole house rewired. One morning, the toaster spontaneously sets on fire.
Crazy.
And they just think, oh, we've bought like a shit house. There's always problems going on. And then Janet starts hearing a voice calling her name when she goes down to the basement.
Oh, horrible. That is horrible.
So in the film, she's going down the stairs and you hear like, Janet, and it's the voice of the mother-in-law. So she thinks the mother-in-law's coming in the house. And she's like, yeah, mom, I'm in the basement.
Mm.
And then she's not there.
Oh, creepy.
Yeah, and then
it's creepy that it's the same voice. There's a voice that she recognises.
Oh, exactly.
Not like, Janet.
No, it's the mother-in-law's voice. And she actually goes round to say, like, were you just in my house? I thought I heard you. And then the mother-in-law's really upset. And she's like, what's the matter? And she's like, I can't believe the language I could hear you using. And she could hear Janet's voice, like, using profanity and saying, like, foul language and stuff.
Ooh.
So they're hearing each other's voices saying things they weren't saying.
What?
Oh. This is all true. This is not just the movies kind of created. This is taken from their accounts.
The movie is based on the book, and the book is sort of ghost-written, but the small Jack and Janet went over it themselves. They were there, and it was their telling of the events of what happened. Okay. So according to them and according to the Warrens, this is exactly how it went down. That's why I just made notes on the film for this one. Like, this film is supposed to be bang on.
Yeah.
This is what it is.
Ghost written as well.
And like you said, when I was watching this, I was very good. That's what I meant to do, right?
Yeah, exactly.
As I was watching this, I was posting a couple of screenshots up on Twitter. and amazingly, one of our listeners actually recognized the screenshot.
Oh, no way.
Was like, was that from that, from like a 1990s TV movie about haunted house? Like, yeah, it was. Tune in next week to find out what it was. and that was Morgaine on Twitter. So Morgaine, if you're listening, well done for recognizing it. So that, obviously she thinks that's strange. She thinks she's hearing voices in the house. But, you know, other than that, bad electrics. Not getting too worried yet. In bed one night, she starts feeling something touching her body.
Mm.
Feeling hands on her. In the night. Oh. She thought it was her husband at first. The way the scene sets up in the film, she's like, Jack, do you know what I mean? Something's touching
get
her
off.
Up.
It's, yeah, it's not your birthday.
She looks over and Jack's like... So that's not happening.
Horny ghosts.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And there's pretty weird scenes regarding horny ghosts coming up later in the film.
Mm. Okay.
So they start seeing, like, things start getting moved around the house, classic poltergeist stuff. So they're finding things in weird places. Like, she's looking for the sellotape one day and she finds it in the fridge, things like that. Things where you might be like, why did I put it there?
Mm.
You know, we've all done stuff like that, put the TV remote in the fridge and things.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but I'm sure I've done that.
Oh, I've done
things.
That one. That's why I use that one as an example.
Really?
Yeah.
No way. How did you do that?
You're just absent-minded, just flapping around. You just put something in a weird place.
I've put something in weird places, but TV remote in the fridge is... I guess if you've got a kitchen in your front room, maybe.
Yeah, that's what I have.
Oh, well, there you go. What, you did that recently?
I forgot you guys don't know. I forget you guys haven't been to this flat. Like, I have a lounge kitchen, like, one room dearly here.
Right.
I'm really curious as to what's behind that door there.
This
just
door?
Keep seeing... Becca go in and out, yeah.
This is my hallway. That's the hallway. That's the front door around there. That's the coat rack.
Okay.
We normally have it open. It's more of like an open plan flat. I just close it when I'm recording, so the sound is more enclosed.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. I'm going to leave all that in. The listeners will enjoy us talking about the layout of my lounge. So where were we? Okay.
Horny ghosts.
Basically, the mum thinks she's going mad.
Mm.
And the husband thinks she's going mad.
Yeah.
Everyone's just like, Janet, you need to calm down.
Janet, you're going mental.
All this stuff. And eventually she's like, I want to move. I want to move house. I don't like this house. There's something wrong with this house. One day, she's in the kitchen. I think she's doing the ironing or something. She's doing some chores. And she just sees a dark figure standing in the kitchen.
Ooh.
And this is just like a blurry smudge on the screen in the film. I actually thought it was quite effective, quite cool. It's just like a dark figure looming in the kitchen.
Oh, creepy.
then it sort of moves out of the kitchen and disappears. And she runs round to next door to see the mother-in-law again. And she's like, I just saw something. And the mother-in-law had seen the same thing. She saw a dark figure in her house move through the wall.
Ooh.
So far it's only the women who are seeing this ghost. And the guys are like, oh, women, yeah, sort of thing. Not believing, they're being hysterical sort of thing.
Bloody women in their ways, yeah.
So Janet has enough of this and she's like, I'm going to go and do some research. So she goes to the library. She does a load of supernatural research for herself. It's before the internet. You got to go down and read books on this stuff.
Yeah.
And she finds out that the area was built over an old mine shaft.
Hmm.
And in the 1930s, some houses caved in. And they unearthed satanic symbols made from pig's bones in the shafts below. And other signs of possible satanic worship. So she's thinking this is all to do with the hauntings in the house.
Mm. I thought you were going to say built above an old Indian burial site.
Yeah, classic poltergeist.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's a satanic stuff in a mine shaft is really creepy.
Yeah, so like quite right, she's thinking this probably is some reason something's going on. This is a paranormal event. I believe this is now paranormal.
Mm.
Possibly satanic in nature. So one night she's laying on her pillow. I'm trying to remember the film. She's laying on her pillow and she hears his whispering voices and she's like sort of startled awake and she's like, Jack, wake up, Jack. And he, what's the matter? And she's like, can't you hear those voices? And he can't. And then she's like, lay on my pillow, come to my side of the bed. And he lays exactly where she was. And then he hears it. And he's like, what the hell is that? Like he suddenly is just like, what's going on? What is that? What is that noise?
That's so weird.
So she goes over to his side of the bed and they sort of cuddle up together. And he's like, stay over here. It's all right. Maybe something is going on. Then she starts feeling something touching her leg.
Yeah, because he's laying on top of her.
She starts feeling something touching her leg. And she's like, it's touching me. And they pull down the covers and he can actually see the indentations on her leg of where something is touching her.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah.
Oh, ghost's getting a chub on.
He was going to ghost.
Oh, God, it had to go there, didn't it? Had to go there.
I'm going to cut that.
Oh, God.
Anyway, right. They can both feel it touching her leg. He actually touches the leg and he can feel like the indentations and stuff. So they go to the church because they want to speak to the Rev. And this is where there's an amazing scene in the film.
Yeah.
I was like, Warrens. There was an actual cameo of the real Warrens. They were in the church. They were like, thank really? You, Reverend. Lovely service, like leaving the church at the end of the service.
Oh, they did a Stan Lee.
Yeah, it was great.
Oh, God.
And I was like, God, I've done way too much research. It's like, as soon as they came on screen, I was like, Warrens. I recognized them. Anyway, they speak to the Rev after the service and they're like, we want you to come round. There's some weird stuff. So he goes around for dinner. He blesses the house. And whilst doing so, he comes over quite queasy, feels ill, and is like, I don't think there's anything wrong with the house. I just feel a bit ill. And he leaves. So I don't know if it's the next day, but the next sort of event that happened is the light fittings in the ceiling in the kitchen fall down one time when they're eating. It's like a big solid light fixture. Actually hurts one of the kids. Mm. And this is like a proper bolted on light fitting, so it wouldn't just like fall out of the ceiling. It's quite odd that fell down. I think Ed talks about that in the clip I'm going to play later. I think they're actually singing. That's what causes it. So they're in the kitchen. They start singing Amazing Grace. They're trying to, one of the daughters has got to sing for her school or she's trying to like calm her nerves or is practicing for church, something like that. But her and the mom are singing Amazing Grace together. And while they're singing it, there's like a reaction from the ghost and the light fitting flies out the ceiling.
Oh.
So Janet starts talking to one of her friends about it. She's saying, all this stuff's happening in my house, listen, you know, light falling down, the figure, the touching, the voices, all this stuff. And her friend says, you know, maybe there is something to this. I've seen these paranormal investigators on TV, Ed and Lorraine Warren. They've made quite a name for themselves in this stuff. Maybe you should get in contact with them. In fact, they're actually holding a lecture nearby soon. You should attend it. So Janet does attend the Warrens' lecture and talks to them afterwards. And the Warrens aren't playing themselves. You've actually got an actor and actress playing the Warrens at this point.
That would be too much, wouldn't it?
Then a really weird thing happens.
Hmm.
Jack's alone in the house in this one scene of the film, and there's like a woman in the house with him, and he's like, "Who are you?" And then this woman like jumps on top of him. This is really jarring in the middle of this film. The woman like jumps on top of him, and from what I can gather, sexually assaults him and is like transforming into like different visages in front of him. It's a really weird scene that really comes out of nowhere in the middle of this film, like a proper full-on sexual assault scene, and he's like laying on the floor like, no.
Oh, that's so weird.
It's really weird and really graphic. And Morgane on Twitter, this is the scene I was talking about when I said, you know, there's one really jarring weird scene in it. And she was like, well, which one is it? I was like, you know, that one. I didn't say what it was. I said, listen next week to hear what it is. It's that. It's really weird. This scene does not go remarked upon again in the rest of the film. He never says to his wife, oh, I was assaulted. He never says to anyone. It's just like one night, he's there, ghost attacks him. Really weird, sort of bizarre scene.
What does it? You said it keeps transforming in front of him. What does it transform into? Like other women, or
yeah. So it's like size and shape is changing. Like it's a blonde-haired woman, then she's got like big curly hair, then she's like thin, then she's fat, then she's. It's really weird.
Oh my life, that sounds mental. And he doesn't mention it.
This doesn't come up in the film again. It's like if that scene wasn't there, it wouldn't affect the. Wouldn't affect the film in any way. It's just like a jarring scene in the middle of the film, which goes nowhere. It's just bizarre.
It's almost like something hit the cutting room floor that they weren't supposed to cut. That sort it's of explains really that weird. Scene. That sounds weird. Okay.
Anyway, the Warrens visit the house. And they interview the Smurl family. They inspect the building. And you mentioned Poltergeist earlier. Well, we kind of both did the building over a burial ground and stuff. This scene was really like the scene in Poltergeist where they're walking around sort of examining the house. The paranormal investigators, Lorraine's doing a little bit of that, checking the lights and things like that. And Elaine sees activity in the house and she sees ghosts in the house and they're like, yep, this place is haunted. And then the family get out of there. And they actually go camping. Weirdly, right, okay. They set up camp.
Okay.
Whilst camping, they see a spectre.
What?
So they're like, okay, it's following us.
A spectre? Oh,
a ghost.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. Is spectre the right word? A spectre is a ghost, right?
Yeah.
A spook.
Is it?
A spook?
I don't know.
They see Phil Spectre camping. Yeah, but also while they're away, their house is going nuts. Like all their neighbors are like, what's going on in that house? There's lights going on and off. There's noises, screaming coming from the house.
Really?
So not only are they being followed, like they're haunted, the house is also going nuts at the same time. And this is where they're concerned, like, we can never get away from this. Even if we leave the house, it's following us.
It's something to do with us rather than the house.
Yeah, like us being in that house has made it cling on to us and now we can't escape it, maybe.
Oh, that sucks.
This is maybe the part of this case which I do find, you know, I said this one didn't have anything beyond just a haunted house, whereas the other ones did. Maybe this is it. Maybe it's the fact that the ghost was almost stuck on them. They couldn't get away from it. It wasn't just the house.
Hmm. Wow. So, and all this other stuff is going on at the house whilst...
Yeah, at the same time.
And who documented that? Was that... Oh, the...
The neighbours. Yeah, when while they were gone, the neighbours witnessed this stuff, apparently.
Oh, well, that's horrible.
And in the film, where it's portrayed as the lights are on and there's like screaming noises from the house and stuff, and all the neighbors are like, what's going on in there? But there's no one there. So they consider leveling the house, just let's destroy the house.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And they speak to the Warrens, and Ed says, don't do that. Ed says, if you do that, then that's almost you admitting defeat, and that will be giving the demons or ghosts or whatever what they want. They will feel like they've won. They will follow you. They will attach themselves to you. And he says, what you need to do is have a good old-fashioned exorcism.
Right, okay. So they haven't had one. I thought the guy at the church did it.
Well, he sort of walked around, started blessing it, and was like, oh, I feel a bit ill.
Right.
And he didn't believe him there was anything wrong with the house anyway. So that sort of comes back. The church doesn't want to get involved at this point. The church will not help them, their local church. There's nothing wrong with the house. They will not comment on this. They will not help. They will not exercise the house. They won't bless the house. No response.
Typical Christians. Never there when you need them.
So they contact the Warrens again and say, look, we want to exercise the house. No one will help us. And then so the Warrens say, look, we know a guy. So they find this renegade priest, as he's described.
Comes in with like shades, cholera. He's like smoking.
Van Helsing. So he performs a family exorcism, this renegade priest, in the home.
Mm.
Okay, so at this point in the film, I thought, okay, we're done. This must be the end of the film. They've done the exorcism. Warrens have come in. It's what normally happens. They do the big exorcism at the end, and from then on, it was all right.
All sorted.
And there's been nothing. There's a week later, and nothing's happened. And then Janet starts walking down the basement where she always used to hear the weird noises and it finds creepy, and she trips down the stairs and catches herself, and she's panicking. She thinks something's tripped her. As she calms down and she's like, you know, I just tripped over. It's nothing. But they're still quite jittery. Then the mother-in-law comes around and says, I've seen the spirit again in my house. I've seen the dark figure. It's still here. Hasn't gone. Maybe they kept it at bay for a week or whatever, but a week later it's back. It's there. And then things kick into overdrive that night. Janet is lifted from her bed and is levitating around the room.
Whoa. That's nuts.
So they've just upset the spirit, basically, it seems.
Oh, they've just made it worse. So they had like a bit of time off.
Yeah, and they came back.
Bit of a lull.
Full force.
Oh, no.
She's levitating around the room in the night. She's thrown against the wall. She's like, Jack, help me, Jack, help me. And he's laying there. He's pinned. He can't move. It's like something's holding him down. He's like, I can't move. You can imagine this with all the TV acting. Just get that image. Have we lost Beef? He's frozen.
I feel like he's... Oh, there you go.
Oh, no, there he is.
No, I'm here.
No, it's all right. Your screen like froze for a second. It was like it was haunted.
Oh, no, it's fine. No, I'm here. So he was pinned against his bed.
The quote I've written here from Jack, while he's pinned, he says, let her go, you bastard! Which is a real good TV line.
Oh, he was waiting for that line, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's his big moment. And it's... Mm. It's like, it's really, you know, we said it's kind of nice to watch these old films because they're so simply made.
Yeah.
It is just a man there pretending to be pinned, like, you know, and just like, I can't move. Like,
yeah.
He's just pretending to be stuck to the bed going, let go of her. It's really, it's hammy and great. I love it. So after this, they get together. What we're going to do, Jack wants to go to the press. He's like, if the press get involved, it will become, we'll shame the church into helping us.
Hmm.
It's because we didn't go through the proper church. We didn't go through our local church. We used this renegade priest. It didn't work. We need the power of our church and the church. If we go to press, it will shame them into helping us.
Absolutely. Get them involved.
So they do that after a bit of humming and hawing, and it turns into a crazy media circus.
Right.
The story spreads. They hoped it would make someone help, but they just become a laughing stock. They're hounded. The press are on their lawn. It's like when Homer sexually assaults that woman when he picks the gummy Venus de Milo off her. And the press are just
sweet
all over the lawn.
Sweet, 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 sweet can.
Exactly. I might have to put that clip back in this episode.
For the second time.
Yeah.
Somebody had to take the babysitter home. Then I noticed she was sitting on her sweet can. I grab her sweet can. Oh, just thinking about her can. I just wish I had her sweet, 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 sweet can.
Yeah. But it is like that. There's media everywhere. People like, you know, with the... Their kids are walking to school, people shouting out the window at them, like, you know, seen any ghosts? Woo! That sort of thing. Yeah. Yes, there's one in my house. Oh. Bye. Eventually, the Reverend moves into the house. And he's there for a little while. Nothing happens. He's there for a few days, I think. Nothing happens the whole time he's there. And he's... goes back to his original stance, like there's nothing going on in this house. I think maybe you're seeing things, you've let this thing get to you, you're imagining things. and he leaves, and they're like begging, they're like, don't go, like this, there is someone in his house, he leaves.
Yeah. They should have just got him to move in.
Well, he did. He stayed there for a couple of days, but he was just like, nah.
Yeah. But then I just, right, you are
forever.
Not leaving.
You're never leaving.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that becomes the vicarage. And then they just move into the other house.
I mean, wouldn't it be great if the case ended there? And then the Reverend moved in and he never left.
Yeah.
it's like the start of a sitcom.
And they lived happily ever after.
Father Ted.
Yeah.
That ghost was just resting in my house. Such a tedious, like, no American is going to understand that.
I love that you brought that reference. That's so good. Oh, I love that. Americans, any American listeners, if you like English comedy, if you want to be really, really confused, go and watch Father Ted.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a show that would translate well to the American audience.
No, I
don't think so. No, I'll give it a go anyway. If you find it, I'd be intrigued to know whether that actually does work.
It'd be like an American trying to watch like Phoenix Nights.
Yeah.
There would be no point of reference for them to understand anything about it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, why is this funny? Oh, it just is.
You know, working man's clubs. What?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, they...
I'm actually going to use the Phoenix Nights theme tune as the outro music this week. It's quite spooky sounding in a way.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's just them little bells, isn't it? Ding, da, ding, da, ding, ding. There we are.
Yeah.
Anyway, you'll hear it at the end of the episode, guys. Okay, so a massive group of people come down who actually want to support the family. They're people from the church. Big group called the Sacred Heart, that's what they call themselves, and they all show up at once. It's like, again, it's like that Simpsons episode, you know, when his real friends show up and it's like Mo and Barney and stuff like that, and they're like pushing their way through the crowd.
Right.
It's a bit like that. The Sacred Heart show up and they all pray together. They light candles all over the house, and there's the house is just like full of people, group worship, basically, groups of prayers. It kind of, again, it stops it. Kind of quells it, not really. They think it's all over, it's not.
Yeah.
Eventually they move house to escape the press, this time more than the ghost, because the press will not let up on this.
Wow.
And when they get to their new house, the ghost followed them.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, because it followed them camping.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the ghost needs a holiday too.
Bloody hell. It's bloody ghost.
So it's relentless. Basically, that's kind of how the film ends. It's like, eventually they moved house. Like, it ends with the big group worship thing, and you think, oh, that's it. And then, like, you know, you get the writing at the end of a true story film.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, eventually they moved to escape the press. The ghost followed. And I'm like, why aren't you showing that? Did you run out of time? The story isn't over. Why are you telling me this in the epilogue?
That's brilliant.
We committed to a 6-week series. We can't do any more of this. Like, yeah, but the story's not finished.
Eventually, we're in May 1989, so this is like 10 years in total. This is going on.
Oh, my life.
In May 1989, a proper church-sanctioned exorcism took place in their new home and worked.
Okay. And that was it. That was the end of it.
And that's it. That's the case of the Smurl family. Then they made the book. Then they made the TV movie.
Did they at any point document how the ghost followed, or does that they just leave it like that?
No, they just left it like that. The ghost could follow them.
That's amazing.
So I mean, if only they'd have just done the exorcism properly in the first place.
Oh yeah, that's kind of it. Like, they had, it seems their local church was just like not very helpful at all.
Yeah.
And it caused them a lot of hassle. And they tried other forms of exorcism. They tried this renegade priest and group worship and all that stuff. And at the end of the day, they got a proper sanctioned exorcism with the proper guy. The exorcist showed up and they dealt with it.
Surprise, surprise, it worked.
The end. But the film was interesting.
I kind of want to see it now, yeah.
It's about an hour 40.
Oh, that's manageable.
Hour and a half, hour 40. It's all on YouTube. It's called if you do The Haunted 1991, it comes up.
That's like a Disney movie. I can do that.
Yeah, it's an interesting watch. I'm so used to films being at least... I see a two-hour film and I'm like, that's pretty short. Films are so long now.
Yeah. Yeah, I might have to give it a watch.
So that's The Smell Family. That's the last case. Like I say, it's kind of just another haunted house story.
Yeah.
That ends with an exorcism. Which is why I haven't given it its own episode. I thought I'd do it on this wrap-up Warren's episode to talk about this final case.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. It is kind of different, though, I suppose, in that it goes with them. That's weird.
Yeah, that is kind of the this ghost's USP. It's it sticks to them.
Goes on like Dragon's Den. Like, yeah, what's going to make you stand out from all the other ghosts out there? Like, well, they won't be able to escape me. They go camping, I'm there.
Yeah.
They go stay over at a friend's house, I'm there.
Sticky bandit, mate.
Sticky.
The sticky bandits.
Pulling out some really obscure references today.
Oh, my days.
Not with Christmas coming around the corner, it won't be obscure.
Exactly, that's what I'm thinking. That's why it's in my head.
Do you see The Grinch was taken off Netflix, apparently?
Why is that?
I don't know. I think it was just taken off just because the license ran out, but it's Christmas, so everyone's like pissed off. But I watched it yesterday morning.
It was on all summer, and then when Christmas rolls around, get that Grinch out of here.
Yeah, basically.
He's not going to ruin Christmas again with his misery.
They took it too literally, the film.
Which Grinch was it? There's three.
The Jim Carrey one.
Oh, right, okay.
Maybe they're making way for like another one of them.
Yeah, there was one that came out last Christmas.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh. What, yeah, as the Grinch?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I never saw it.
Is that where we get the gif, which is, it's always like, you go around a friend's house, they say, don't bother the dog, and then it's just the Grinch, like,
I can't really explain it. Oh, that's the Jim Carrey one, yeah, I think so.
Is that's where that's from, is it? Okay, I've not really seen it. I've never seen it, but I've been on the set of...
I was on the set when it was being filmed, is that what you're going to say?
I've been there, yeah.
I was in it, but I've never seen it.
Wasn't even interested in seeing it after being in it.
Yeah, it's Hollywood. It's Universal Studios Hollywood,
right?
Yeah, they've got that and the War of the Worlds, set, and then you drive past the Bates Motel. It's all there.
It's all there.
It wasn't. It's all there. And Desperate Housewives. It's also just like a road with loads of houses on it.
Is that Wisteria Lane?
That's it, Wisteria Lane. That's the, that's
why
the
do
chap,
I know that?
I don't know.
I've never seen that show. I think I just remember that from adverts when it was passive. You was here like, oh, what have the housewives of Wisteria Lane been up to this week? Anyway, so there we go. Talking of films, we talked before about how so many of these cases have been turned into films, have been developed into films. So like the one I just talked about, The Smell Family, that was developed into the TV movie The Haunted from 1991.
Yeah.
And before I talk about the other films a little bit, let's listen to an interview with Ed and Lorraine where they talk about The Smell Family haunting. Oh, and this video, towards the end of it, has my favourite examples of Lorraine just not being allowed to speak.
Oh, all right, okay, awesome.
Okay.
Ed, can you tell us how you started?
Yeah. I also would like to mention that this was a movie of the week. Mm-hmm. And that movie was done beautifully. Mm-hmm. The Smurl family insisted that there be no fabrication in that movie at all, no Hollywood hype. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the most frightening cases we've ever been involved in. But I'll never forget the family calling us up, us driving up to West Piston, and going in, and as a religious demonologist, I do carry relics of saints. I carry a true piece of the cross. And about a half hour after I interviewed this family, they told us amazing things. First, how when they moved into the home with the grandparents, this was a duplex house, as you'll see. It's in a coal mining area. And they felt, well, maybe something was happening underneath because of the old mine shafts. But the things that were happening would be when Janet would go down into the basement to do the wash. And she heard somebody calling, "Janet, Janet." And she thought, sounds like my mother. So she went all the way upstairs. She said, "Yes, Mom, what is it you want?"
Mm-hmm.
No mother there.
Mm-hmm.
And then she would hear strange sounds from the different corners of the cellar. One of her daughters was making holy confirmation. This is a religious rite in Catholicism. And the girl came into the kitchen, and they were all excited about going to the church and having the confirmation.
Mm-hmm.
There's a huge light up on the ceiling.
Now, that is bolted to the main beams that are in the kitchen, Tony, that light. Big, heavy bolts right okay. into the main beam.
Now, this light started to just shake, tore itself loose, and almost hit the girl.
Mm-hmm.
That, of course, was very unnatural. Mm-hmm. They checked everything. There was no way that that should have come off there. Then there was all kinds of trouble with the electric. Mm-hmm. Everything was going kaplooey. Television sets, toasters were burning. Wiring that they had just put in the house was just going dead. They couldn't understand it because Jack's father is an electrician.
Mm-hmm.
He put all of this in himself, in his own house. And you know, a man that does his own home, he's got to do a good job. Well, from that point on, they lying in bed one night, and all of a sudden, the bed starts to rattle and shake. Then they start seeing black shadows moving across the bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
Jack and Janet are lying in bed, and suddenly she's talking, and something grabs her by the leg and yanks her right out of the bed onto the floor. Jack at first didn't believe all these things until he heard the voices himself.
Mm-hmm.
He's seen his wife being dragged out of bed. Then there's the night when the both of them are lying in bed, and both of them rise up into the air, mm-hmm. up as high as the ceiling.
Like, just like the Lutz family
just
in
like
Amityville,
Lutzes.
Long Island, Tony.
And they're dropped onto the bed.
Mm-hmm.
We went there, and a half hour after I was there, I used religious provocation. We went up into their bedroom.
Yeah, let me tell you about that. We sat on the edge
Why
of the bed.
Why can't I tell them?
We sat on the edge of the bed.
You could repeat it later if you'd like.
And we sat on the edge of the bed, and Ed put out these different things he had with him, which were all relics and things like that, and he put them on the bed.
I was also playing hymns from nuns, you know, beautiful music.
Religious music.
Yes, Ave religious
Maria,
music.
Things that would really frustrate a devil.
So there you go. You can hear her keep trying to talk, and then him just, even when she talks for like 2 seconds, he jumps back in again.
Oh, man.
But that's their account. So you can hear them being interviewed by Tony Spira again.
And I just love that even when she goes to tell her part of the story, he's like, can I tell it?
Yeah.
Like, mate, you've been talking nonstop. Draw some breath.
When she finally starts explaining something, she says about the songs, and then he jumps back in again. She's just like, you can hear the resign in her tone where she's just like, mm-hmm. Yeah, there we go. So you heard their version of some of the things that I'd gone over in sort of the version of the story that I'd given on here. In the film, it looked more like they lived next door to the parents, but they're in that they said it was a duplex. So there you go.
Oh, okay. So it was the same building then.
Yeah, by Ed's account there. Yeah, in the TV movie, it looked like they were more like next door neighbors, but maybe it was the same building. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Nice.
So aside from the haunted film, I think we've mentioned on the other shows before, but there's been so many films based on their cases. You got the Conjuring series, the first one based on the Perron family, second one based on the Enfield Poltergeist. Third one is in development now, rumours to be about the Southend Werewolf. From those like fairly all right horror films, you've got some worse spin-offs, the Annabelle series, the Nun spin-off movie, which aren't really based in any fact. You got multiple versions of the Amityville Horror story case. You got the Demon Murder Case movie, The Haunting in Connecticut, that's based on the Snedeker family, There's a film called The Crooked Man that's in development, which is a spin-off of the Conjuring movies again. I imagine that's going to be trash as well.
yeah.
And then finally, there's the film called The Bawley Rectory, which I haven't watched yet. I actually picked up a copy of that last week to watch, but we talked about that before. That was a Kickstarter film. And they actually got Rhys Shearsmith involved from Inside Number 9 and The League of Gentlemen. He's actually stars in it. Yeah, it's like a pseudo, it's like part dramatized film, part documentary, and he has a big involvement in that. So I've actually got a copy of that to watch here. So when I get around to that, I'll report back on it. But I would like us to look into Bawley Rectory in more detail in another episode, because there's loads of stories around that building that don't involve the Warrens. So.
Interesting. Oh, I remember that. I remember Rhys Shearsmith talking about it on Twitter like ages ago as well.
Yeah. I think it came out quite a while ago, like last year or maybe even the year before, but I've only managed to track down a copy of it myself. So I will get around to watching that. It's not super long. I think it's like an hour 20, something like that. So.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I didn't realize how many movies have actually been made from, and I guess once you've, got three or four solid ones, there are going to be some crappy ones made as well, just to jump on the cash cow.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize there were so many. I didn't realize The Nun was like a spin-off.
Yeah, well, The Nun, the image of The Nun is kind of how Lorraine always described the ghost from the Bawley Rectory that we spoke about a little bit. And they used that imagery in The Conjuring 2 as like a spirit that had affected her. Like, she sees images of it and it's sort of haunting her.
Right.
And then because that imagery was popular, they just made a film out of that. These spin-off films don't really have any tie-ins to it. Interestingly, right. Tony Spira, I saw an interview of him fairly recently, and they were like, what do you think about all these spin-off films that aren't really following the cases? And he was just like, it's fine. They're not affecting anything. If anything, it's kind of a positive that they're making, at least shedding light on the fact that, there are real cases of, demons and possession and ghosts and things like that. The fact that they have a tenuous link shows that maybe there is a possibility that these things are real. So he was like trying to see it in a positive way like that.
Fair enough.
But horror films are cash cows to studios anyway. They're cheap to make and they make a lot of money. So
yeah, of course. Yeah, absolutely.
So obviously Ed and Lorraine, we spoke about all these episodes, including this one. Ed, in case you can't remember, demonologist, Lorraine, clairvoyant, and Tony Spira, who we mentioned a few times, was interviewing him in that clip, as their son-in-law, and he is now continuing their legacy, even now, after Lorraine's death.
That's nice.
There we go.
You back?
Yeah, cool.
That's right. So yeah, Tony Spira is now continuing their legacy. Yeah, actually, really recent bit of news from him. November 1st, so only a month ago, he actually held a talk in Connecticut called The Warren Files.
Right.
Which was talking about their cases. And he actually, as a surprise, prop had a guest in attendance with him. He took Annabelle with him to that talk.
I saw this, yeah.
Yeah, what do you think about that?
It's disrespectful, isn't it? Because didn't Lorraine and Ed say, don't take it out of the case?
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Like, what a tosser.
I've heard different reports from it, where some say it wasn't the real one, it was one that looked the same, and some said, he joked that it wasn't the real one, and then actually revealed it was the real one. And everyone was trying to get pictures of it and stuff, yeah.
Oh, that is disappointing.
What, out of its case?
Yeah, it was just sitting on a bench in the middle of the stage.
That's
on, a little stool.
He's asking for stuff to happen, isn't he? He's asking for stuff to go wrong.
Blatantly.
I don't know. It's weird, isn't it? Because ultimately, there's a part of me that just thinks, it's just the doll.
Yeah.
But it's disrespectful, I think, to... He's not a demonologist, or he's not really a Christian, or what's his deal? He's just been documenting their journey, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Is it I don't know. Maybe because there's kind of like a weird... So as I think as a Christian, my experience of all this stuff is you approach all of this with, it's not really respect, but you understand the power behind a lot of this stuff. And you know, I've shared my experiences and you kind of, you're just wary, I guess, that whilst, you know, our belief is that, you know, kind of God trumps the devil in a sense, you still want to be careful, I suppose. And you're not really lording it about, and you're not being playful with it. You're not being, So I just feel like, yeah, is that maybe, I don't know, is he kind of going against their wishes, really? It seems a bit.
I think so, in a way. We've actually watched footage of on an older Warrens episode of them doing the tour of their building where they have all their lockup, all their artifacts. And yeah, in a way, we were like, oh, isn't that a bit weird to turn it into like a museum of sorts? But even on that, they're sort of like, don't touch anything and walking people through. To bring it out and put it on a stage is a little bit more like showman-y in a weird way. And I wonder if he would have done that if either of the Warrens were still knocking around.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I've always found the museum thing to be a bit strange. I suppose, really, is it better, you know, if they believe these items are still haunted or they still carry like a demon with them, you know, I guess maybe it's almost like a sacrificial thing that they're taking it out of the victim's house and they're just kind of like holding on to it. And if they've done exorcism stuff, then surely these items shouldn't have anything hanging around anymore. So yeah, but yeah, I think you're right. Having it out of its case and kind of just there is very strange.
Letting people take selfies with it and stuff.
Oh,
I don't know. It said people were taking pictures of it. When it says that nowadays, I just think half people were like jumping in doing selfies with Annabelle.
Oh, you know, people were having like Snapchat filter selfies, like putting bunny ears on Annabelle.
Yeah, that's going to upset the spirits, isn't it?
Definitely. Yeah, you can feel it. There'll be another movie.
It's the proper litmus test if it does.
Annabelle's Revenge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe he wants something bad to happen because it's like continues the legacy. He's like pushing the spirits.
Exactly.
Oof. So I'm going to play one more. This is the last clip I'm going to play. This is from a documentary that was on Bravo, that channel.
Oh, wow.
Quite a few years ago. And this is Ed and Lorraine visiting a family who believe they have sort of a spirit in their house. I'm just going to play like a short couple of minutes section from this.
The Warrens feel that some of the most compelling evidence ever recorded has been videotaped by them in this Connecticut home. For months, the family, whose faces are obscured to protect their identity, have been tormented by what they fear is a poltergeist. Ed attempts to communicate with the troubled spirit.
One knock for yes, two for no. Are you a man? Are you a boy?
The mother leans against the kitchen table, her hands in full view as Ed continues asking questions.
You want the people in this house to move? One knock for yes, two for no. Yes. Okay.
We couldn't sell.
Who is it that you don't like the most here? Is it Is it their father? Is it their mother?
Oh my God.
Okay. I command you to reveal your identity.
Next, Ed decides to confront the poltergeist alone.
Give me some sign. Is that you moving something? Give me some sign that you're here.
I just want to point out for you guys and for people listening, at that point, the chair moved. It pushed itself out from the table with no one touching it when he said give me a sign that you're here, like one of the chairs around the dining table moved out free of its own free will.
Right.
I'm gonna carry on playing it now.
What I did was use religious provocation. I have to provoke it into some type of outward manifestation.
And that was my point in doing that.
In the name of Jesus Christ, I command you to reveal your identity.
All the chairs moving at once.
On the following night, the family reports that the poltergeist seems to be more active than ever. Only now, its attention is focused on the family's 10-year-old daughter.
The little girl is trying to do her homework. You can see if the chair keeps sliding backwards.
You're holding it down, aren't you? It's got that much strength to it.
Now, if you watch, you can see the little girl's legs are up on the rungs of the chair. She's not pushing herself up from the floor. The mother is not tipping that chair backwards. No. Nobody is touching that table. The table moves of its own volition.
The Warrens quickly arrange for three priests to perform an exorcism in the home, and the disturbance ends. But for how long?
Okay, there we go.
Hmm.
So the chairs are moving, and that bit at the end, what was happening is the girl was sat at the table doing her homework, and someone was trying to hold the chair down, but as they were doing it, it was like pushing against them.
Right.
Apparently.
Was the girl wasn't saying anything, was she?
No.
Just chilling.
Just doing her homework. She was sort of like leant over writing.
That's so weird. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Their methodology always surprises me.
Okay, go on.
Just the way they kind of like talk to the demon and get it to reveal its identity and stuff like that is, I find, strange. But he's not really. Are they Catholic? Did you say they were Catholic? I think we looked at this ages ago, didn't we?
I can't remember. Yeah, it would have been on a previous episode we were talked about that.
Yeah, but anyway, that's pretty horrible. I don't like watching stuff like that because it's.
And if people do want to watch that clip that I just played the audio of, if you go onto the blog, I'll put a link to it there. It's weirdtalesandunexplainable.com. So there are people who criticize the Warrens. We've spoke a bit about that on some of the episodes before.
Mm.
I'm just going to read a little something here. This is just from Wikipedia. This isn't anything like super in-depth, but I just wanted to recognize the criticism that some people have for the Warrens.
Mm.
So in a 1997 interview with the Connecticut Post, Steve Novella and Perry DeAngelis investigated the Warrens for the New England Skeptical Society, NESS. They found the couple to be pleasant people, but their claims of demons and ghosts to be, at best, as tellers of meaningless ghost stories and, at worst, dangerous frauds. So I think I have quoted that on a previous episode from this interview. They took the tour and looked at evidence from the Warrens of their spirits and ghosts. They watched videos and looked at the best evidence they had. Their conclusion was that it was all blarney, in quotes. They found common areas with flash photography and nothing evil in the artifacts. Quote, they have a ton of fish stories about evidence that got away. They're not doing good scientific investigation. They have a predetermined conclusion which they adhere to, literally and religiously. Lorraine Warren said the problem with Perry and Steve is, quote, they don't base anything on a god. Novella responded, it takes work to do solid critical thinking, to actually employ your intellectual faculties and come to a conclusion that actually reflects reality. That's what scientists do every day, and that's what skeptics advocate.
I see what they're saying here. I think that's the whole point, is your intellect and your ability to rationalize is not going to be necessarily very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Like I defy anyone to be in a situation where something's happening and they have nothing to explain. Like I don't know that you can scientifically explain away this stuff, and you know, I don't know. I just think that's a bit short-sighted.
Well, the problem is he's come in at the complete opposing end. He's part of the skeptical society, so he's not looking for any truth, and they're not looking for any skepticism, and it's just like an unstoppable force, unmovable object. There's no middle ground. You need some people that haven't really got, you know, a horse in the race or whatever. They need to come and have a look at it from their own opinion, just a layman. come in, not necessarily a skeptic, not necessarily religious, just let's have a look at this. Novella also quoted in another interview, they claim to have scientific evidence which does indeed prove the existence of ghosts. I think I've quoted this on another episode as well, which sounds like a testable claim into which we can sink our investigative teeth. What we found was a very nice couple, some genuinely sincere people, but absolutely no compelling evidence. So, again, he doesn't believe there's any evidence there.
No, but compelling evidence, you know, maybe, you know, we said in this case, and you mentioned it earlier, that, you know, there were periods of time where nothing happened at all, when other people were in the house. It's difficult, isn't it? It's their word against everyone else's. They, you know, it's difficult to say, but it seems like people maybe need to be a bit fairer.
So there we go. We've covered all the major cases. We've talked about the Warrens at length, more than we've talked about anything else on this show.
We've done it.
If, as a listener, you are more interested in learning more about the Warrens, there is a book which I've actually had a couple of listeners email me about and have said is an enjoyable read. I haven't read it myself. The book is called The Demonologist, The Extraordinary Career of Ed and Lorraine Warren, and that's by Gerald Brittle. So I've had that recommended by some listeners. I thought I'd put it out there in case, as a listener, you wanted to learn a bit more about them. That book, The Demonologist, it's available on Amazon, it's available anywhere, so I will recommend that. Now that we've covered all the cases and spoke about them, guys, I'll go to Tissy first. What are your final thoughts on the Warrens as people, fraudsters, genuine? What do you think?
I wouldn't say fraudsters. I suppose you have to believe they believed in what they were doing. I guess, I don't know, the world doesn't have a lot of them anymore, people looking into paranormal cases as a proper profession. Especially the old school way of actually going to it, people do it all over the internet now, so no one really leaves their house and does the miles that they did. So you got to respect it, I guess, if nothing else.
I think they'll always be the most famous paranormal investigators.
Yeah.
And they're more famous than ever now, thanks to all the films. Like, people know who the Warrens are now. And all the
podcasts.
All the podcasts, yeah. Like, since we started, there's a million other podcasts to do basically the same as what we do. And so many people have covered Warrens cases and stuff, biting on our stees. So yeah, they're more famous than ever, and I don't think there'll ever be a more famous paranormal researcher than the Warrens.
Yeah,
no, probably not. Not in the same way.
Derek Acora. What do you think, Beef? Do you think they're genuine, Derek Acora? Do you think they're genuine, or?
I think they are genuine. I think, like I said, my personal experience leads me to believe they probably are genuine people. You know, I've seen similar stuff which is horrific and terrifying and completely unexplainable, and you can't explain it away. So I think they are real, and I think they were, and I think they were definitely, I don't know, I don't see anything malicious there. I don't think there's anything there where they were trying to just gain fame from it, or they're just trying to kind of just achieve anything of their own agenda or do anything selfish. I think they were genuinely trying to help people. I just find it interesting that, yeah, like I say, their method of kind of like chatting to the demon, and that's kind of, it seems like with every case they kind of do this whole chatting stuff and having a little one-on-one with the demon, and then the exorcist comes in and he's like, right, step aside, guys, let me actually sort this out, and then it's dealt with. So, but, you know,
it's like they've got the knowledge and connections.
Yeah, exactly. There's no particular harm in it, really, if that's what they're gonna... And actually, I wonder how much comfort people got from them just being in the environment with them and experiencing it with them. Mm-hmm. And I guess, I don't know, maybe the demons, like, had, in the demon world, the Warrens were like a famous you know. So I wonder, I think maybe you would. You take comfort from the fact that you've got this couple that come into your home and they seem like nice people and they just listen to you and, yeah, just, and then share in your experience as well. That's quite brave.
Yeah. Either way, they're really interesting characters and the cases they've been involved in have made for some amazing stories. Whether people believe in them or not, there's some really famous and just cool stories that's led on. That's why there's been so many films based on them, and I imagine there will continue to be. And I'm sure that some of their lesser known cases will be mined for content at some point. You know, they got, as I said, over 7,000 cases, and there's maybe, you know, 10 that people really know about. So be interesting to see what happens. I'll throw my hat in the ring. I kind of do think they're shysters. After all the research and all these episodes I've hosted on them, I've sort of kept quiet on what I think of them. I kind of think they're shysters, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Fair enough.
Why is that?
It's probably just my skepticism. It probably plays a big part in it. I don't know, something about when I see them interviewed, the way they are so rigidly sticking to a certain version of the events, it seems. And I've seen little times where they've contradicted themselves. And I know some people forget things and misremember or misquote things or whatever, but I don't know, some of it just seems like they're trying to maintain the image of the Warrens as the brand rather than, but you know, I don't know. I'm like a natural skeptic. So of course.
But are you skeptical of the whole thing, or are you just skeptical of them as a couple?
Of the whole thing, because I don't, as I said on other ones, I don't believe in ghosts. Because to believe in ghosts would mean that I had a faith, surely. A ghost is the afterlife. It's, to me, if you believe in ghosts, you must have some sort of faith, which, as I said on the show, I don't.
But what about your experiences that you've had at your mum's house?
That's interesting, actually. We do have a ghost stories episode in the works, and I think I'll revisit on that because I've had a few interesting experiences within the last year, which I've been saving for that. So that's a little teaser. That'll probably be the first episode we put out in 2020. So I know we said we'd do it before Christmas, but we're running out of time. 2020, the first episode back will be this ghost stories episode, and I've got some interesting tales of my own for that. So we'll come back to that, but yeah, I'm glad you brought it up. So that's what we think. I've got some messages from listeners regarding the Warrens coverage here.
Nice.
Just a few. I did put a little shout out on social media a couple of days ago, and we had a couple of people respond to that, so I thought I'd quickly read some of those. So a message from someone who is destined to never be listener of the week. Do you know who I'm talking about, guys?
Anthony
Anderson.
Yeah. He said on Twitter, "I'm very skeptical about them, although the cases have been very interesting. I did like the Amityville story best, I think, but I also enjoyed the film. I'm not sure about Annabelle. That one seems too hard to believe."
Fair enough. Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think the doll stuff is... the whole thing about haunted objects is bizarre, even for me, even for someone that's seen spiritual activity and experienced it firsthand. I still find that I don't know why they would choose to do that. That sounds
weird. Inhabit. I think it's something, I think we said about it when we did the Annabelle one, but it might be quite interesting to delve into that a bit more on a full episode of Weird Tales, just look at haunted objects and what that's about.
Yeah.
A couple more here. This is John Aiken. This is on our Facebook page. "Some of my favourite episodes for sure are the Warrens ones. I love learning about the cases and how closely the movies follow the events. I can't say if I think the events are legitimate or not, but I think they definitely believe they're helping. I can't wait for the next episode." So this is the one. I hope you enjoy it, John.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah?
I don't know how legitimate they are, but I think they believe they're helping.
Okay, yeah. That's kind of what you said in your final thoughts, actually, Tiss. Like, as long as they believe what they're doing is good, then that's mainly what counts.
Yeah.
If anything, you've got to look at it and think the trend is that people get in touch with the Warrens. Strange shit happens. People get in touch with them. They dick around a bit and then put them in touch with an exorcist who sorts it out, and then it's finished. And if that's resolved and people are able to live peacefully, then that's, then they have effectively done, you know, some good. So yeah, I think Tiz is right. You know, it's not, I think their intentions are well-meaning. Just, I think, yeah, maybe they're a bit weird.
I got one more response here. This is from Jeff Armstrong. I love learning more and more about Ed and Lorraine. The Amityville case is by far my favorite because I grew up reading the book, seeing all the movies, learning stuff about it. Most of the movies suck, but that one's still my favorite case. I'm glad you guys have got to talk about them as much as you have on those great episodes. So yeah.
Sweet.
Again, lot of people enjoy the Warrens. Us, the way that we've methodically gone through the major cases and sort of delved into them as people, I think people have really responded to that.
Sweet.
And I think that's it, unless you guys have any final comments on the Warrens or the cases.
No,
not particularly. It's been really fun looking into all this stuff. And I think it's been interesting to see some of the parallels and then occasionally get something which is very different. I like the werewolf one, and it's been fun. It's been good. I can't believe it's actually done.
It felt like never ending. I had this weight on my shoulder of these Warrens episodes. People, whenever I said, what do people want to listen to? Whenever I put out sort of polls or stuff on Twitter, people were always like, more Warrens. And now they can't do it. It's done. I'm not ever doing any more Warrens, guys.
Now I've already talk about now?
I've already got people who want me to follow up my church conspiracies one. You know, I did the conspiracies of the Bible ages ago. And I said at the time, I've got a few episodes in mind for this. It'll be like a series. I've already got people sort of, now you can carry on with that one. And I'm like, oh, no. Not another series.
Yeah,
I think that'll only be two more episodes on the church stuff. I've got two episodes in mind.
Do a couple of one-offs and then.
Oh yeah, I'm not going to delve straight into the church stuff.
Delve back into another Warren.
I've actually had so many ideas for episodes recently, so I'm excited to look into a few other things.
Sweet.
So yeah, there we go. That's the finale of the Warrens coverage. I hope everyone enjoyed it. Listener of the week this week, we're going to give it to, guys, do you remember this week we had an email from a listener?
I remember this. Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about? We've had a few emails recently, but this one in particular, so John Higgins in Southern California.
Listener of the week.
Listener of the week. Thanks to your girlfriend, Michelle, who sent us a really nice email. She requested that we made you listener of the week because you're a long-time listener. You've turned loads of people onto the show, including her and other people, and she promises that you'll continue spreading the word over there in Southern California. So do that. Get us more listeners. That's the way to make listener of the week. John Higgins, thanks for spreading the word, and listener of the week. Yeah, that's it.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, bro.
Don't get lazy, though. Keep getting listeners for us. You know, just because you've been made listener of the week.
You may have hit your peak. You may have got what you wanted with listener of the week, but don't stop spreading the word. And thank your girlfriend for letting us know about you. So thanks, John, and thanks, Michelle. Let's make them joint listeners of the week.
Absolutely. It's always nice to get the good emails to counterbalance the crappy ones.
We've actually had some really nice reviews in the last week. I think from our bitching on the last episode about bad reviews, we had some really nice reviews since the last episode, the last few weeks. Let's do a push. If you want to send us a Christmas present, everyone, there's a donate button on the website. But there's also, you can also for free go and give us a rating and review. That would be the best Christmas present. Let's boost these numbers up because we've had some real stinky reviews in the second half of this year. It's because we're on Spotify now. We've got a load of new listeners. They maybe haven't been around for as long. They don't get the vibe of the show so much. And they're leaving stinky reviews.
It happened when we first started, didn't it?
Yeah. It's like when we first started, we were nobodies, and then we kind of got big enough that we had loads of nice reviews, and now we sort of hit a wave where we've got slightly bigger than that, and then we've got loads of new listeners, and they don't like us. So we need to get... I think now it's all downhill. The bigger we get, the worse the people hate us. Yeah. So yeah, balance it out. Send us some nice reviews. We'd really appreciate that. Finally, no marriage of the week this week, but there has been a baby of the week.
I think okay. I know where you're going with this.
Good friends, Haley and Brad, who have actually been on the show, the Halloween campfire episodes, which are always popular. They were hosted at their house in their fields around the campfire. Haley and Brad have had their second child. They've had a daughter. So congrats, guys, from all of us at Weird Tales.
Congratulations.
Congrats.
I love doing these like marriage, baby, engagement.
It's
of the
so
week,
weird.
Lifestyle Can things.
Could you imagine if we'd have been doing this for the last 4 years? Like, oh, we need another baby, guys.
Yeah, come on, for the good of the show. Yeah, so baby of the week, the new baby Ven.
Baby Ven.
Baby of the week. Let's start making some new jingles. So quickly then, if you want to watch the videos of these interviews of Ed not letting Lorraine talk, or the chairs moving around, or any of the stuff we talked about this week, all links to all that stuff is on the blog weirdtalesandtheunexplainable.com. There's a blog post for every episode on the website. You can also find links to our social media accounts, Facebook, Twitter pages for us, our personal Twitter accounts. You can also buy merch. You can also, I actually bought some new merch. There was a good Black Friday sale, so if any of you got in on that, well done. By the time you listen to this, you've missed it. You can buy merch on there. You can donate to the show. All those good things, go on the website and you can do that. You can also contact us on the website or contact us directly at unexplainableuk@mail.com. There we go.
Done.
Boom.
Finished the end of the Warrens.
That means I get to say it one final time.
Go on.
Until next time. Done that for a while.
No.
Warren, you're glad you listened.
it gets better every time.
We did have a message recently from someone saying they missed the bad puns, but it's tiring to come up with, isn't it?
We've done so many. We started with such enthusiasm about it all.
Yeah.
And then just realised how quickly the puns dried up.
If anything, I'm glad that the Warrens are done. This is like a little epilogue. This could put us off the music. If anything, I'm sort of glad that the Warrens are done now, because these episodes are so one-way traffic. By the end of it, it's like I have a sore throat. It's like I've been telling a story for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
There's
not much discussion involved. It's just you relaying information and us kind of giving our thoughts on it, which is fine. But
it's like the opposite to my Murderabilia episode, where it's like, you know, 90% discussion. Let's talk about this. All those sort of ones. This is just like, I get to talk forever and now I'm so tired and my throat hurts.
Yeah. You get ones like that every now and then, though, don't you, where you just, there's only one way of doing it.
Yeah, it's like your moon landing one.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot of information to put across.
Yeah. I was tired after that one.
Yeah. But then whenever I do those ones, I always think, I've been talking too much, listeners are going to hate this. And all those episodes are always really popular. So it's just different types of episodes we do. Like the moon landing one was really, really popular.
Yeah.
Anyway, I know we're after the outro music now, but listeners, there's going to be one final episode this year. So enjoy it. Tiss is already underway with it, aren't you, Tiss?
I'm already underway.
There you go.
Look forward to it,
no
mate.
No clues.
It's going to be banging.
I think I already know what it is if it's the one you put in the chat.
It might be. I might change.
Oh, okay. We'll see. All right, one more episode and then a little break. And we'll come back 2020 with ghost stories and then we'll make a plan going forward.
Yep, sounds good.
More.
That's the end of the episode. I feel like we just keep adding stuff to it.
Yeah.
Get that Grinch out of here.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.